The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
And welcome back to the First Cut podcast here on CBS Sports. Welcome. Is there an Irish greeting? I don't have a Northern Irish greeting for you, man. It's the Open Championship week, and we're off and running. Kyle, I missed you so much. We have not gotten a lot of back and forth, just the two of us. So we've got a lot to unpack here from the weekend, and also starting to look at storylines for the Open Championship this weekend in Royal Port Rush.
Yeah, we do. Bill Simmons just tweeted the most boring sports week of the year, and I was aghast because Chip, it's my favorite week of the year. It's open week. It's the best. I mean, look, like, do I love going to Augusta? Yes. Do I love going to Pebble Beach? Of course. But staying home, not sleeping, Open Championship all week. By Friday night, like, get back to me. But right now, I'm jacked. Let's do this.
Well, and you did something that was kind of cool. And we'll get into both the Scottish Open and also the John Deere takeaways in a moment. But you pointed out on Twitter that what we've gotten, particularly from our Sundays alone in the Open Championships in recent years, you know, there is a certain snootiness to, championship golfer of the world. And you know, everything around the Open Championship, but it has delivered, as they say, worthy champions and worthy championship moments almost every year here in the last couple, what, like seven? You took it back to 2013, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so if you go, let's see here, I've got it right here. If you go 13, Phil shot a 66 on Sunday at Muirfield. That was sick. That was my first. So these are all the opens that I've written about or covered. So that was my first one. I was like, oh, this job's great. This must be what it's always like. Then 14, Rory goes eagle. I think he went eagle, bogey, eagle to close his third round on Saturday at Liverpool to not really lock it up, but he was kind of, I mean, it put him in the driver's seat, certainly. 15, Spieth takes a grand slam through the 70th hole at St. Andrews, which was just unreal. And then he bogeyed the road hole, obviously, and just hit an awful shot on 18 to miss the playoff. 16, Phil Stenson, unbelievable. 17 was go get that from Spieth after just the – maybe, like, it might have been, like, the greatest golf Twitter 20 minutes of all time when Spieth was – dropping by the Titleist truck. I mean, I think that was peak golf Twitter. I don't know if it's ever getting better than that.
Well, the end, we mentioned the relationship earlier, but like having already been at least 2 years inundated into Spieth and Greller, the two of them, cameras on, mics on, talking their way through how he's going to figure something out on that hole. What'd he say? He made Greller run to the top of the hill and he said, get me a good number.
Get me a round number.
A round number.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, that's one of my favorite moments in golf. And I think that I'm glad that we're highlighting that as part of the Open Championship because we're 2 years removed. And I just think it's really important that that doesn't get lost.
Yeah, certainly. And then last year, Chip, Spieth, Tiger, and Rory all either led or co-led on Sunday. And, you know, we remember that for, Francesco not making a bogey. I don't think he made a bogey all weekend at Carnoustie, which is a joke. But, you know, kind of the way he closed or whatever. But that was a wild, like, 3-hour stretch where, you had so many different guys leading. Tiger, the first two rounds, I remember Brandel being like, oh, he's so conservative. Why isn't he hitting driver? And you're like, is he like, what's he doing? And then all of a sudden on Sunday, he leads and you're like, oh my God, like, is this going to happen? And it doesn't, but you know, all six of the ones that I've covered have been pretty amazing.
All right. So let's look back at the weekend that was here at the John Deere. Dylan Fratelli holding off what was a really fun Sunday. We've had this streak on the PGA Tour in the last little bit, especially with some of the younger players and especially with Victor Hovland, where someone always seems to be throwing a 63 down early on Sunday. And it has not led to necessarily a winning performance, but it has felt like in some of these just sort of regular schedule PGA Tour events that when the leaders are teeing off at like 2:30, they know that there are a ton of birdies out there and that people are chasing them because someone had thrown a 63 or 64 down early.
Yeah. So I went on HQ on Saturday night, shout out to CBS Sports HQ. And they're like, give us a winner for Sunday. And I was like, man, I feel like it's going to be somebody from like kind of not deep, but somebody from like that T8, T11 spot, because and this is what we've seen the last 3 weeks is these courses are so easy that you go out early and you post like that 65 or that 64. And all of a sudden guys that are behind you that are leading going into the final round, they start to like think about the number and like, what do I have to, you know, start doing math. That's never a good idea on the course. That's
never a good idea.
And yeah, like I really genuinely thought because there were so many 64s and we saw 61 on Sunday, so many numbers out there that it wasn't going to be one of the leaders that ended up winning. And that's kind of how it played out.
All right. So what did you think about Fratelli's performance?
I mean, it was great. You know, he only makes one bogey all week, which, you know, even if we're playing putt-putt, that's so impressive. That's so good. The thing that I kept thinking about, though, was the symmetry of him getting his first win at the John Deere, just like Spieth did in 2013. So they were teammates in 12 when Texas beat Alabama at Riviera to win the title. And Fratelli actually made the winning putt there. I think he was a senior. Spieth was a freshman. And then Spieth wins the next year, like basically a year later at the John Deere, his first win. He's 19 years old, gets into the Open. And, you know, 6 years later, Fratelli's a guy like European Tour, like he's done that whole thing. He's a fine player. He's not going to blow you away. He's good. He's not Spieth. He's not a top 50 in the world guy, but it was kind of a flawless performance on the weekend. Really impressive.
We also had Colin Morikawa, as he had, you know, was right there in the mix with Matthew Wolff. He'd been playing so well. The sort of the conversation that I had with Sean Martin involved a lot of, is he going to be able to get that same kind of job security? And while it's not official, I think that we can unofficially say based on the FedEx Cup points that he's earned so far, that he is more than likely going to be able to have his tour card for next season already.
Yeah. So it's weird because I think it isn't official until the end of the regular season. But right. if you've earned enough points to be what, like if you've earned more than like the 125th place person on the FedEx Cup list, you're in for next year. And so he's well beyond, I don't know what his number is, but he's well beyond whatever the projected number is, to the point that you're like, yeah, he's going to have his PGA Tour card, which is crazy that him and Wolf have already earned their card. And I think Ryan Lavner said this on Twitter, like 7 weeks ago, these dudes are playing in the NCAAs and now they've locked up cards for 2020. I mean, it's wild and it's really impressive. And I'm looking forward to watching both of them for a long time.
With there has been because of this season, a little bit of a spotlight shown on the Open Championship qualifications. You know, among the headlines from the weekend, Beef Johnson, who's shot a 62 to be able in the final round of the Scottish Open to be able to qualify for the Open.
Yeah.
You know, you're starting to see it. Doesn't Fratelli get to go to the Open now?
Yeah, Fratelli's in. So there was one spot at the John Deere, and this is kind of a weird deal. With Wolf, like, so he won last week at the 3M, but right. The 3M didn't have they didn't have an open qualifying spot, but the John Deere did, and so Fratelli's in, but Wolf isn't. And then the Rocket Mortgage had two, and so Doc Redman, who finished second there, is in the open, but Wolf isn't. So that whole thing was weird. But the Beef thing is awesome, because I had read there was a couple of things that came out in the past, I don't know, month or a couple weeks or whatever, just him struggling with just mentally, like not even with golf, but just like off the course, like dealing with fame and just, you know, like the story we hear a lot, like the lack of fulfillment from this life that you think you want. And he sort of broke down after the Scottish Open, shoot 62 to get in the Open. The Open was kind of a big deal for him. I think it was 16 at Troon when he finished in the top five. That was kind of his breakout moment or whatever. And I think there was a little bit of a full circle thing there for him of like, man, ever since then, I've really been struggling. I'm back in the Open. And he broke down and started crying. And it was just, it was cool. It was a good, it was a cool deal. And just sort of an insight into, like, you know, we think of these guys as not human, but they very much are. And especially somebody like him, who I think resonates with a lot of people.
Right. And the, you know, we always talk about the European tour and the way that I believe, in whatever my opinion is worth, I believe they do a really good job of highlighting their players, the human side, the funny side, just sort of giving you a better look into it. I too had noticed that had been him opening up about mental health and trying to, you know, just talk about it and create it as part of the conversation has definitely been something that they've pushed. And then he goes out and he has the golf to be able to lock it up in the Open. I was happy for him and not surprised that he would cry. I'd probably cry too in that moment.
I know. And like, I think we do a bad job of underplaying how big of a deal it is to get into these majors. Because like we look at the top 15 or 20 guys and they always get in, like they're just always qualified. But for somebody like a Doc Redman a couple weeks ago, for Fratelli, who's only played in, you know, like six majors in his career, for Beef, who hasn't played an Open in a while, for Graham McDowell, you know, going back to Port Rush to play in the Open, he hasn't played an Open in a while. It's a big deal just to be in it, you know, not to contend, but just to like tee it up on Thursday. And it's easy to forget that, I think.
And now it's time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. This is a big time to be checking up on stock, because you are going to be trying to get your selections for the Open Championship, for whether it's your pool or your picks or whatever it's going to be. You always want to try to take a forecast of what it's looking like moving forward. Let's start after a missed cut at the Scottish Open. Ricky Fowler, who we are recording this on Monday, was out with Tiger Woods and Dustin Johnson. How's that for a practice group at Royal Portrush on a Monday morning?
It's pretty solid. Pretty good. I feel like I always come to the Open stock up on Fowler. Like, it feels like he's going to win an Open, but I'm kind of down this year, which probably means he's going to win. But I don't know, like he hasn't been playing great. Miscut at the Scottish is not ideal. Let me pull up his last few finishes here. So he goes miscut at the Scottish Open. Before that, I think his last tournament was US Open, where he was just kind of average. I don't know. I'm not as optimistic about his chances at the Open this year as I usually am.
I've settled on I stock down. I can take that. I've settled on Ricky Fowler as a high floor golfer right now.
So like, what's his equivalent in another sport? Is he like a Rudy Gay?
Ooh. Maybe. He's a really, really solid number two on a basketball team.
So like Rudy Gay, you're like, okay, I'm getting, well, I don't know about Rudy Gay now, but Rudy, like prime Rudy Gay, you're like, I'm getting 16 a night, but I'm probably never getting like, or I don't know, maybe 18 a night. I don't know if I'm ever getting like 28 a night.
Yeah, he's a really, really good second best scorer, number two guy on a five-man basketball team right now. He is always somebody that you want out on the floor, but right now, I don't know if he's getting the ball in the final possession.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, do you feel the same way I do about him at Opens? Like, is that the one that you're like, yeah, that's the one he could win?
No, I've had my confidence shaken in Ricky in terms of trying to think that I know what he is, but there is a level of consistency, and that's why I come back to high floor. He is a really, really good golfer, but if we're judging players by their finishes, and in particular by their finishes in majors, he's high floor, but I don't think that he's got as high of a ceiling as some of his peers.
Do you know how many points Rudy Gay has scored in his career?
Total?
Yeah.
I don't even know that I know these numbers well enough to have a good guess. What is it?
15,000 points.
It's a lot of points.
He's averaged 17 points for like 13 straight years. That's crazy. So Ricky, so since his T4 at Wells, so he has T9 Masters, T4 Wells Fargo, PGA T36, misses a cut at Colonial, T14 at Memorial, was pretty good there, faded on the weekend, T43 US Open, T46 Rocket Mortgage, shout out to his sponsors, right. And then misses the cut at the Scottish. It's not been great since the Masters, honestly. He was good at Wells Fargo, but yeah, I don't know, not a ton of momentum going into Portrush.
Matt Kuchar coming off a T20 at the Scottish Open. We have a CBS Sports HQ show coming up here in a little bit, and I can tell you right now, I'm guessing that you're going stock up here.
Yeah, look, like I'm just preparing everyone for Matt Kuchar 2019 Open champion.
Here for it.
Like I don't know if I'm here for it, but it's in play. And the reason it's in play, look, he's having the best year of his career. And I got the data right here. Like he's been really good at Opens, obviously 17 runner up to Spieth kind of infamously, but he's got another top 10. Let's see. Kuchar's got two top 10s in his last five Opens. He was leading after, I think, day one at the Scottish, contended into the weekend. There's a lot of converging things on him at Portrush. And Opens are like, for somebody like him who's not, you know, 300, 310 off the tee, like it just brings him way more into play than maybe like a PGA or even a US Open at a big ballpark.
I want you to get ready for this. It is Matt Kuchar, 2019 Open champion. Matt Kuchar, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient. That's the way that this goes here in the next couple months.
What a turnaround from February to July.
And finally, for stock up, stock down, Victor Hovland, who has been playing well. But what is his stock?
Well, I'll put it this way. His stock for getting his card, like his card stock, no pun intended, is down.
Yeah.
And the reason is like he's running out of, the math doesn't work. Like he's running out of, you know, options here. So he's got, I think, two starts left. He's got the opposite field event during Memphis, and then he's got Wyndham. And he just can't, unless he finishes top five at like both of those or wins one of them, I just don't know that the math adds up. But look, he's going to get to the Korn Ferry. I can't believe it's the Korn Ferry Tour, but he's going to get to the Korn Ferry Finals and probably earn his card that way. So I don't think it's going to be a huge issue, but it's just kind of, it's interesting because going into Travelers after the US Open, we're kind of looking around like, wait a second, is it Hovland instead of Wolf and Morikawa? And then all of a sudden, Wolf and Morikawa have their cards for 2020 and Hovland doesn't.
And that has been Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. Coming up on the other side, our stat of the day, next.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain. Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any US orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
All right, Kyle, stat of the day. Let's break it out. What do we have?
Stat of the day, I'm looking back at the last 40 majors. I put this out on Twitter, so some people have probably already seen it. But so Tom Watson almost wins the 09 Open at Turnberry, and there have been 40 majors played since that major. And I wanted to see who had the most top 10s in that time. I woke up like at 4 in the morning one morning thinking about this. This is where I'm at right now, like just with my golf. I was like, man, I wonder who's got the most top 10s in the last 10 years. So I ran the numbers on it. I'm just going to go up the list, starting with the two guys at eight. So eight top 10s in the last 40 majors, Sergio and Zach Johnson. 9, Phil. 10 is Spieth, Tiger, and Fowler, which is a fascinating trio. 11 is Stenson, Westwood, Koepka, and Rose.
I think Westwood. Koepka only...
Do I?
I said Westwood's the one that seems like it was backloaded, and if we were working our way backwards, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Like all of those came in like
09 to 14 or something.
Yeah, yeah. And then he had the one in 16 at Augusta when he could have won that if Danny Welt's baby had come a week later. But
get out of here.
It's a great what if. It really is. Okay, so 12 was Matt Kuchar. He's got 12 top 10s in the last 40 majors. Nobody at 13, nobody at 14. Adam Scott and Jason Day at 15 top 10s in the last 40 majors. So the Aussie duo. 16, nobody. 17, Dustin Johnson. He's got 17 top 10s in the last 40. 18, nobody. And then 19, Rory McIlroy. 19 top 10s in his last 40 in the last 40 majors played.
If Dustin Johnson, how many majors did Dustin Johnson miss during his time away? Only 3 or maybe more?
Yeah, I think he missed 1 or 2, something like that.
Okay. Because he could be higher. He could be closer to Rory.
Well, yeah, and you have to start doing, because I think Koepka's percentage is probably the highest because he was in college in 09 or whatever. But I wanted a total number. I think the most impressive number on this list is Tiger at 10.
When you consider how many he missed.
How does he have 10 top 10s in the last 40? He's only played in like 13 of them.
I think he's pretty good at golf, Kyle.
Yeah, I think
to be in the top 10 at a major championship means that you are probably within, different for every golf tournament, but let's say a handful of strokes to the person who won, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that you expect some of the best golfers in the world to, they may not win all the time, but we should expect you to be within a handful of strokes of whoever went out and won it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right about that. Hey, are you excited about Portrush?
I'm excited about Portrush.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
It's have you been doing your like course tours yet?
Yeah, I've done kind of a deep dive. It's just, I think my biggest takeaway about Portrush is it's very linksy, but I think it's going, like, some of the times we on TV anyway, which is how we consume all these, you're like, oh, this St. Andrews is going to be awesome. And then they show it on TV and you're like, it's cool, I guess. But I think it's sort of an in-person thing. I think Portrush is going to come across on TV. Like, I think it's going to be sort of pebble-ish on TV, which will be really cool.
Before we get out of here, because we're going to be tackling a lot of these all through the week, you know, Mark Immelman will be on later. We're going to have a mid-open championship update on Friday after the cut, previewing the weekend. And then, of course, Sunday night, Kyle and I will be back for our reaction. But what is the sense from what we've got so far on where Tiger is at physically right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know. I think he's fine. I just think, here's the weird thing that I was thinking about, Chip, is it's almost like I thought a major win would make a lot of this talk go away about his like health and all this. And it's almost like we've talked about it more since he won the Masters than we did before. Have you felt that?
No. Well, elaborate. I don't feel that.
So here's my take is like, he's in a really weird, it's a good spot for him, but it's a weird spot because anytime he plays poorly now, we're going to be like, oh, well, it's probably health. It's probably his back. It's probably not, he's probably sluggish, probably not feeling well. It's almost like because he won the Masters, it's so much easier for us to excuse away his poor play. And it might just be because he's 43 years old and he's not as good at golf as he used to be.
Well, when you say he's 43 years old, that is like, that to me is kind of the same as being like, oh, he's sluggish. Oh, his back hurts. Oh, it's
yeah, like, but we don't talk about it with, why don't we talk about Phil like that?
Because we are not, because Phil has not been in contention in majors the way that Tiger Woods has. Tiger Woods was there at the Open. Tiger Woods was there at the PGA Championship. Tiger Woods is winning the Tour Championship, and he won the Masters. Like, Phil Mickelson hasn't sniffed the kind of major championship contention that Tiger Woods has had in the last 3 years.
Did you see Phil went full Kepka and like didn't eat for 6 days?
I'm starting to take all of Phil Mickelson's reports of Phil Mickelson activities with a big granite of salt.
Like a salt mine?
Yeah, I mean, dude, like we, no. Like I'm in for the ride and I think that this is very fun and I'm glad that he's talking like this, but I mean, we need to put like WWE type sensitize on everything Phil says right now. Seriously. Like he's gonna be like, doesn't that sound like boxers in the 1920s? Right.
Well, it sounds like Phil is engaging in some like we're all like laughing at his Twitter, but it's going to turn into like state run media, like Phil reporting on Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Like this is him marketing himself. Yeah. I'm going to say professional wrestler. That is, I enjoy professional wrestler Phil Mickelson, you know, and like all the claims that he does in the promo shots during Monday Night Raw. But like, nah, I do not believe, I'll say that, I don't believe that he fasted. Not by strict definitions of fasting.
The fasting thing, he said he only did water and coffee. I'm like, that, I would die.
Well, it sounds horrible. And he has lived too comfortable a life for too long for me to truly believe he's going to put himself through all of that.
Maybe he like fasted from drinking wine out of the claret jug or something.
I guarantee you he found a loophole just like he found a loophole in the rules at the U.S. Open. He found loopholes to fasting. That is what my belief is.
Oh, getting back to Tiger though, like, I don't know. I think the Open is where his health matters the least. Now, get back to me if it's like 48 and just whipping around the Atlantic Ocean over there. But I think that, like, just, I don't know, going into Bethpage, like, you have to be so, like, physically just, I mean, Koepka and DJ were 1 and 2 for a reason there. And I think that at a Open, at a Lynx course, like, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't matter as much, I don't think. Like, he doesn't have to hit driver a ton. I mean, maybe he will more this year than he did at Carnoustie, but I think the health and the, like, physical, like, how he's feeling physically matters less than it does at a really long, like, a Shinnecock or a Bethpage or somewhere like that.
I think it takes an extra drive to power through your physical shortcomings, and with, I don't want to, like, oversimplify this for risk of it sounding very low-hanging fruit, but I do believe there's something to the fact that his an insatiable drive that allowed him to get his game in a certain place where he was winning the Masters has kind of been satiated. And when you don't feel good, I would not be surprised if Tiger Woods is lacking maybe whatever that extra gear is in like literally margins for error that are the slimmest of the slim. I do believe that he's pretty satisfied with his 2019.
Yeah. And that's something that there's been some, I've heard some things around that, I guess I'll put it like that, of like, it's kind of just like, whatever, man.
I think it like I would. I'd be like, if I was Tiger, I'd feel like 2019's gravy. Playing, yeah, like all good.
I'm not saying that that's like, I don't think that that's what he's necessarily saying or feeling, but I think just internally, like, that is, how could you not?
Right.
How could that not be the case?
Right. And that's where I'm at, where I'm like, I think that if, you know, and I can't remember where it was, but it was watching him and I was like, man, I know that doesn't look like that would be a fun round of golf for me. Like, I would be uncomfortable and a little bit unsettled if I, like, you know, those rounds of golf that you buy or you commit to or you travel to, and then the weather is horrendous, but you just grit through it because you've already paid for it and committed to it.
Yeah.
Like, when I see those rounds in major championships, it's those ones where it's like, I mean, would I be totally engaged in this? And
that's
I get
what Bethpage was, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I think he was a lot more optimistic going into the US Open. And then, but still, like, it just, I don't know. It hasn't been like crazy eyed cat, you know? He hasn't been like just like a lunatic out there. He's just been kind of like, I mean, he's been kind of Koepka like, just like, yeah, you know, well, didn't have it, whatever. And which is fine.
Which,
like,
is, that's, which again, is totally, totally fine.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't know. I think he'll contend. I don't think he'll win. I mean, can you imagine? Shane Bacon was tweeting about this. Can you imagine if Tiger wins? Well, I guess it can't happen now, but if Tiger had won 2 majors and Federer would have won Wimbledon this year? It'd be insane.
Hey, Federer won Wimbledon. I don't care what you say.
I know. Did you watch it?
No, but I mean, I was in the car as it was going down. I was not tuned in live, so I had to catch up later.
It was unbelievable.
He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.